Folks, I think we'll get started. I know some people are grabbing a bite to eat. Some of us are going without, so if there's a little growling around the table, you'll know what that's all about. We're going to first spend just 5 minutes on reviewing how the bonding process will work for this committee. Probably most of you remember from last year, but I thought it would be wise to go over it again so we're all on the same page, and also for the people who are presenting their bonding proposals or here to learn more about them. So, Mr. Straw, Mr. Crow, which one of you wants to do that? Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair, members, you have in your packet a summary of the governor's bonding proposals, and this will be a good starting point. This spreadsheet at the front lists all of the projects requested by agencies and recommended by the governor. You'll see this spreadsheet as we go through the bonding projects, and after we've heard a variety of bills that may not be on this list, those will be added to the list. At the time that you've heard all of the projects, all of the bills that you intend to hear, and I'll add all those to the spreadsheet, and then you need, according to House rules, to make a recommendation to the Capital Investment Committee about what priority those projects have for the committee. House Rule 4.12 says that each finance committee must submit recommendations within its jurisdiction to the Committee on Capital Investment for further disposition. And the informal deadline for that, well, the formal, it's not a rule, but the Capital Investment Committee has stated that they have a deadline of receiving those recommendations by March 17th. My understanding is that this committee has a deadline of hearing those recommendations by March 9th or somewhere around there.
End of next week.
So, at that time, when that time comes, you will vote and rank these projects in a certain order based on your priorities and assign a dollar amount to them. One difference with, or one unique twist in the rules with capital projects is that the rule states that basically that if a finance committee recommends no funding or a negative recommendation on a particular project, that the Capital Investment Committee cannot pursue that project. The rule reads, if a recommendation of the Finance Committee with jurisdiction expressly disapproves appropriations or the issuance of debt obligations for a specific capital project, the Capital Investment Committee may not report a bill authorizing appropriations or the issuance of debt for that purpose. So you can rank things one through whatever, But you also have the option of doing a negative recommendation, which completely prevents the Capital Investment Committee from putting that project in a bonding bill. So, for example, if you had 15 projects, the bonding committee could decide that your 15th project is one that they would do. But if that project had a negative recommendation, then they couldn't even go ahead at all with that project, according to House rule.
Representative Braddon.
So the negative recommendation is that there's a zero amount of financing, or there could be a zero amount of financing, then it still could be considered if it didn't also get paid with the negative recommendation.
Right. Madam Chair, Representative Greiling, just for clarity, it makes... If you don't have a negative recommendation, in other words, if it's the last ranked project and it has $0 on it, that's not necessarily a negative recommendation. I think for clarity, it makes sense if there are projects that have a negative recommendation that they be that be put on the record. If it does have a $0 amount on it, that could be interpreted as a negative recommendation under the rule, and the project would not go ahead. So I think it makes more sense to say if you're going to have a negative recommendation, to explicitly do that, not have any vague anything vague that doesn't make clear what the committee's priorities are.
Are there any further questions for Mr. Crow? All right. Then I will ask the people who are here for the Minnesota State Academies to come to the table. And while they're doing that, is Jennifer here? We have a new page, Jennifer Witt. Welcome to the committee, Jennifer. You'll have a lot of work this year. And then also, the gentleman who's going to be writing for House Information Publication is here. And that's Tom Owen. And this is Tom. So we welcome them to the committee also today. And then one more time, our new CLA is Kathy Detman over here. And our new committee administrator is Karen Ballmer. So we're glad to have everybody with us today. And then if you are ready, Ms. Mitchell, you may begin.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman and members. Thank you. I'm Representative Patty Fritz from Faribault, Minnesota. And I have with me today Linda Mitchell from the Faribault, Minnesota Academies. And first of all, let me thank you for your support of the Minnesota State Academies in the past. We've had some folks come here to visit, and I think they were very impressed, and as you should be, with the beautiful buildings and structures of those buildings and the wonderful work that they do. And we do have Linda Mitchell here with us today. We have another request this year for the bonding proposal.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. I am Linda Mitchell. My official title is Academies Administrator. What that really means is that I function as the superintendent of the School for the Deaf and the School for the Blind, and am the head of that state agency. I have some folks with me here today that I'm going to introduce in just a minute. We are fortunate to have a couple of parents of our students with us today, and we are delighted to have them share their stories with you about how they came to find out about the academies and then access our services. I just want to give you a brief, and it'll be a brief in a nutshell, background synopsis of who we are. We have been in Faribault for over 140 years, actually on the same sites that we are currently on. The two schools are about a half mile apart. We have gone through some restructuring in the last couple of years where we now have one superintendent, which is me, and then we have a director of each of the schools, a director for the School for the Blind and a director for the School for the Deaf. We have five departments that we share, which helps us in terms of our fiscal responsibilities. Those five include health services, nutrition, our maintenance department. I'm going to forget the other two. Food services, thank you, yes, we share that. And the human resources, that's, yes. And we provide services to children who are deaf or hard of hearing, blind or visually impaired, who are from zero birth to 21 within the state of Minnesota. We provide services to all of the school districts in the state, and we provide FAPE, the free and appropriate public education, to the students who attend the academies. Students access our programs through their local school districts and are enrolled at the school in a process that includes both school, the local school district representation of the residence where the child is from, academy staff, and then the family of the students. I'll stop with that because I want you to listen to them and not me. And I would like to introduce Vicki Keller and Sally Burkhartsmeyer. Vicki's daughter is a student at the School for the Blind, and Sally's son is a student at the School for the Deaf. So I'm going to turn it over to Vicki first and let her tell you her story.
Welcome back.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. My name is Vicki Keller, and I live in Byron, Minnesota. I have a 15-year-old daughter. Her name is Danielle, and she's attending the Minnesota State Academy for the Blind. She's in the multi-challenge classroom. Danielle is considered legally blind. She's hearing impaired. She has mental retardation. She does not have any understandable speech. She uses some simple sign language, and she has obsessive-compulsive tendencies. And that's a lot of labels for a young woman, but she is truly a blessing. She is a remarkable young lady. I visited the school originally when Danielle was about 5, and went there and said, no, this is not the school for her. Danielle will never go here. And at that time, it had somewhat, in my opinion, an institutional type feel. And of course, that was before the remodeling and some of the updates of the building that they were able to do. And about 4 years ago, I had a friend of mine who also has a daughter with some developmental disabilities. She said to me, I'm going to go visit the School for the Blind. I've been there before. I want to go there again just to see if I'm trying to look at options and just to see if I want to center there. And I knew that was not the place for Danielle. And I said, I'll go with you. I wanted to give her some moral support. Well, I was very surprised when we got there. It was amazing. It was a beautiful building. They had done many updates. But what impressed me the most was the children there, the students there, and the staff. We observed the students for about a half a day, and it was remarkable what they were able to do there. We had an opportunity to talk with the teachers. I can't tell you how many teachers and staff people came up to us and talked to us. And it was very apparent and obvious that every staff person that came up to us was child-focused. They were focused on the child and the child's needs and helping that child to be successful. Well, right there and then I knew Danielle needed to go there. And I'm a believer in inclusion. However, I believe inclusion means where does Danielle feel that she feels included. In our local school district, she was beginning to start middle school. And she was in a classroom that she never left with 3 other students who were also nonverbal. She wasn't getting out into the other classroom because of her skills, and that's where I knew she was going to stay for her next several years, her school years. And I know now that at MSAB, she does feel included where she is. For the first time ever, she has friends. She has 2 really good friends, and they kind of seeked each other out. It wasn't a friend that, okay, here's your friend. This is going to be your friend. One of her friends is also nonverbal, and the 2 of them walk hand in hand throughout the school, and whatever the connection is, I'm not sure, but they've connected with each other. She has another friend who is very verbal, and I had the opportunity to talk with her a couple months ago, and I can't tell you what that feels like for a parent when you have a child telling you why she likes your daughter, what fun things they do together. She's never had that experience before. About 2 years ago, Danielle had a detached retina, and it has left her blind in the one eye due to cataracts. She was born with cataracts in both eyes. I'm concerned about her other eye because they said that is something that can occur. My background is, I have a teaching background and I have a master's degree in developmental disabilities, and I can't even begin to think that I can teach her the things she needs to know if she should go totally blind. That's what I count on at the school. They're there. I want her to learn the skills while she still has some sight. She is now traveling with a cane, doing cane travel. When she first came to the academy, she literally was fussing all the time. They spent I don't know how many months with her walking out in the hall, up and down the hall with her fussing, trying to get her used to the school. She now can cane travel. She accesses the swimming pool there a couple times a week. She's able to do 5 laps lengthwise of the pool, dog paddling and kicking her feet. That's exercise she can't get at our local school district. That's exercise I can't get her at home. She rides a bike, a 3-wheeled bike around in the gym. Again, exercise and working those muscles. I can't keep her busy enough in the summer. And when it's 20 below outside, we go to the mall. That's what we do when she's home. She has so many activities that she accesses at the school. They're teaching her job skills. She's learning real job skills for when she gets older. She makes $1 an hour paper shredding, and she's darn good at it. She's working in the library with a library job. They have a case that has a cassette tape in it. Her job is to open the case, put the cassette tape in one pile and the container in another. She's learning self-sufficiency skills. She started as a day student, and again I said, oh no, Danielle will never be a residential student. We worked very hard to get her there. She is now a Monday through Friday student. She leaves Monday morning, comes back Friday afternoon. It was an incredible job that the teachers had getting her used to staying in the dorm. She's never been away at night before. And they not only worked with Danielle, keeping her there as a residential student, but she helped Mom because Mom wasn't quite ready for that. And we did it together, and it's wonderful. It's okay. I wouldn't have it any other way. She's learned so many things there that I just can't teach her at home. I was lucky that our school district was in support of sending her there. Last year, at the end of the year, I had our special ed coordinator call me and say, Vicki, I haven't heard from you all year. And I said, what does that tell you? Because I was the parent that was on the phone at least every other week with our local school district. Her needs were not met, and I felt like I was teaching the teachers of how to teach her. I have nothing but good things to say about the school. She is included. The teachers are like moms. They're very educated, but I know she's getting the love and support she needs there, too.
Thank you very much, Ms. Keller.
And now I'll turn it over to Sally Burkhardt-Meyer. Sally's son is a student at the School for the Deaf.
Good afternoon. I'm Sally Burkhardt-Meyer. My son Ethan is in 8th grade at NSAD. He's 14 years old. He lost his hearing when he was 3 years old due to spinal meningitis. We lived in Jamestown, North Dakota. He attended the public preschool and kindergarten there for about 2.5 years. In a very short amount of time, we realized how frustrated he was being in a public school system. He was profoundly deaf. He couldn't communicate with his peers. He couldn't socialize. I mean, we knew that he was going to become very frustrated. So at some point, we decided to research the deaf schools. We looked at North Dakota's deaf school. We looked at South Dakota's deaf school, and with a couple other deaf schools. And the most significant memory I have is when we came to MSAD, and we spent half the day there, and we met with the teachers, met kids. I watched my son's interaction at MSAD and to the other deaf schools that we had visited prior. And he had a smile on his face. He was so relaxed. We went for lunch that day, and he eavesdropped on a conversation over on another table with some little boys for coffee. And he started to laugh. And we looked by the person and I said, we know where we need to go. So we went back home within 6 months, sold our house, relocated to Faribault, and within 2 weeks of attending school, my son came home and he expressed to me how his old school was so bad, and this is from a 6-year-old, and telling me how wonderful his new school was, and how he had friends, he could talk to his teachers, he didn't need an interpreter, he could go and he knew other deaf kids, because at that point he had never even met any other deaf kids. So it was unbelievable. And moving to Faribault and being a part of the deaf school has been 8 years later. If you ask me, and I have the same situation, within a drop of a hat, we would do the same thing again. We have no regrets. He has peers, he has role models, he has communication, he has the best learning environment, he has socialization. And he goes to the dorm after school and socializes with the other kids who are residential. He is in the sports and basketball, football. He gets to experience a normal childhood, and he gets to have his grandparents. And we couldn't have found that anywhere else. And we looked at other schools, and we didn't find that feeling or that atmosphere that we have found at MSAP. One of the most things was that I know that if we would have stayed in the public school with him, that he would have been so frustrated, would have been so lonely. He would have had no one to talk to, no one to interact with, any of those things. So when I look at MSAD and I'm a part of the site council, the parent advisory, PTAJA, there's a support system. It's like going to any other school for him. It is so important. I mean, I don't know that he would thrive and will succeed if he wouldn't have came to MSAD. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for your testimony. We're...
Sure.
I have next up Sean Vernick.
Yes.
Would testify, is that correct?
And okay. Sean is the director of the School for the Deaf. I specifically asked him to come today because, as you will see, Sean is deaf himself. And on our bonding list is a request to renovate for Chef Hall. For Chef Hall is the boys' dormitory on the MSAD campus. So Sean grew up in that dorm from the time he was 5 years old until he graduated. And I think he has more that he can tell you about that experience than I can. How are you going to do this?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Representatives. My name is Sean Vernick. I'm the Director at MSAD, and thank you, Linda Mitchell, for your introduction. I still remember the very first day that I went to MSAD back in 1978. Now you know how old I am. It was one of the greatest moments in my life, even though I came from a deaf family. My parents are deaf, and they both grew up at MSAD, and so did my brother and my sister. We're all very successful in our lives thanks to MSAD and everything that they were able to provide us in school and in the dorm. Where we had so many opportunities to build our character, our socialization, our everything, and that's what says we learn more outside the classroom than we did in the classroom, and I'm sure that was true at MSAD. We had excellent programs there, but also things for children that we could do and learn about our lives in the dorm. And you must be wondering, why did my parents send us to MSAD even though we had full access to language and communication at home? My parents knew very well what we would gain at MSAD by living there. And most of our childhood we were there. We did go home on weekends and during the summer times, but even then, we didn't have friends at home. They were all hearing. We were deaf. We couldn't really communicate with them. At MSAD, we had peers. We had friends who had the same experiences. They communicated like we did through American Sign Language and English. And we had language role models through staff, adults, students, and they both using both American Sign Language and English. So we had exposure to both languages. It created a self-concept that brings us to where we are today. As far as living in Frechette Hall, I have many, many great memories of Frechette Hall. The building replaced the old boys' dorm where my father and my uncle grew up. That building had a huge gathering room. It had a gymnasium in the basement where they could play basketball and all of the different games. We didn't have that. We don't have that in Frechette Hall 9 now, but I do remember it was boring sometimes because of that. We really didn't know the difference, but can you imagine how wonderful it would be if we had a gymnasium in the dorm for the boys? You know how boys can be, especially in the wintertime. And really, I'm so pleased to be able to see this moving in this direction, and the hopes that Frechette Hall will be better able to serve the boys in the years to come. And so that we'll be able to continue the services needed for children in Minnesota. Thank you very much for your time.
Madam Tutor and committee members, I would like to have Harry Chappie come up. Harry is the physical plant director for the state academies. So if you have specific questions about anything on our bonding bill here, we can address those.
All right, welcome, Mr.
Chappie.
Rubin?
Chappie.
Chappie. Ah, we spelled it. Okay. All right, thank you very much. Sorry about that with the name, sir.
Not a problem.
Do you want to go ahead, please? I presume you're going to talk a little bit more about the actual physical structure and what it is that you need and why.
Madam Chair, committee members, thanks for inviting us up here today. Thank you. I just want to say thanks for your support in the past. And we have always felt quite comfortable coming here. I have been working at the academies for 18 years, and I just want to give you a little history on the dollars that have been appropriated in various years. My first year at the academy, a huge appropriation, capital budget appropriation or whatever, was in the neighborhood of $300,000 or $400,000. And as I looked around, I could not figure out why more money was not put into it. So we started very aggressively trying to rectify that, and I'm very happy to say that you've been quite generous in giving to us. This year we are asking for our number one request is an asset preservation request, which we always have as our number one. And within that asset preservation request, we take care of things as such as roof repairs, roof replacements. This year we happen to have two buildings that need new roofs. We have some tunnels that need repairing. We have sidewalks that are in need of repair and roadways that need repair. And normally our asset preservation request is about double what this year's was. And what the governor recommended. We initially had asked for about $2 million more, and it was deemed by someone that one of our projects was probably not a good fit for the asset preservation. So $2 million got pared out of that, and we're happy with what was recommended, and we'll proceed with that. The biggest issue, recommendation is the Fichette Hall, $5.5 million. The governor recommended that. And although Fichette Hall, relative to most of the buildings on our campus, is a fairly modern new building, it's still 40 years old without not much done to it. And when it was built, it was constructed in a way that totally is not conducive to the type of residential living that school kids should be in today. There's not much privacy in it. There's not much romping space and so on and so forth. Mechanical systems are getting very old. Electrical systems are getting old. We are probably not going, when someone drives on the campus, we are probably not going to be able to say, there's the building that we just remodeled if we do get this money, because it's a stone building and everything we plan on doing will be inside. And with that little background, I'd be happy to answer any questions relative to that.
You know, I would be very interested in, did you prioritize the way you did? Did you prioritize leaving the Pollard Hall project as your last priority?
Is that the way you prioritized your...
No.
No.
No. So the Pollard Hall project was part of our initial asset preservation request.
And did you prioritize each of your requests, I guess, is my question.
No,
Madam Chair, well, I don't mean to interrupt you here. No, and in fact, when we initially put the list together, as you can see, if you look at page 7 and go down that list of projects, we were really starting at the top with the least expensive projects and listed them in order. The issue was that, and I'm not sure why this happened, but when we put in the Pollard Hall project, for whatever reason, we couldn't put it below. It kept jumping up to the other place. So they were intended to be in order of expense, but that one is out of order.
Well, maybe I could just ask the Department of Finance, would you like to comment on, you know, the governor's recommendations?
Madam Chair, members, Lisa Miller from the Department of Finance. The governor's recommendations are for $2.509 million for asset preservation and $5.557 for the renovation of the shed. And the reason why the governor's recommendation does not include the Pollard Hall piece is not because it's not a good idea, but the reason why it's not included is that the program is not fully developed. And the main reason for the renovation of Pollard Hall was for the mental health inpatient program that they would house in that facility. Mm-hmm.
All right. That's interesting because I had just been reading that that was the idea behind Pollard. Would you like to comment on that?
Madam Chair and committee members, yes, this is, can I just be real blunt with telling you how our plans have worked in the past, and we have these standalone projects that we list, of course, asset preservation projects first, and then we have second and third and fourth on down our master list. We have not had real good success in the last few years in getting any of those standalone projects passed, but we have been successful in getting our asset preservation. So our intent really when we put Pollard Hall in with asset preservation was in hopes that we could get some remodeling done in that building, which would address the needs of what we're hoping will be a collaborative program with Volunteers of America, Department of Human Services, and the academies in providing mental health services to deaf children. All of that aside, and it's not that we have left that concept or idea behind, but with the governor's recommendation for us to be able to renovate for Chef Hall, we're looking at the possibility of being able to provide some space potentially in that building to house the dormitory part of the mental health program. So
in the
So we didn't need both. So it was logical for us to say, fine, we won't do anything with Pollard Hall right now. The other piece that has become kind of interesting for us is that for whatever reason, recently, we have a couple of different entities in Faribault who would like to lease Pollard Hall from us, and for us that is a kind of way of generating revenue, so that's something that we would be looking at as well.
Maybe they'd like to fix, renovate it, and
then give it back.
Okay, I have one other question then about the roads and parking. Is there a specific reason why there was no recommendation on the roads and parking? Seems to me we talked about that in this committee last year.
Well, we have asked, I think this is the third time, we finally decided that maybe we should stop asking, so we did.
Madam Chair and members, I don't have a specific comment on the roads and parking in terms of why it wasn't included. I think the governor had some priorities to make in terms of the bonding recommendations, and as you know, there were significant number of requests for bonding appropriations this year, and I don't have a specific comment as to why that wasn't included in the recommendation.
Okay.
Madam Chair, may I comment, please?
You certainly may, Mr.
On the roads and parking situation, there was also within that a building, a garage building and a workshop area included, which at the MSAB campus, we have none of that. A few years ago, the legislature appropriated monies for the demolition of one of the main buildings, the oldest building on campus, Dow Hall, which along with that took our garages and our repair shops. And we were trying to connect these two projects together. We certainly do need the garage. We do need some reworking of the roadways. But Linda and I have discussed it, and we think maybe we'll take a different approach to this. And put the garage building maybe the next time around as a standalone project.
I assume that in spite of the fact the governor didn't recommend it, you would still like the roads and parking. Is that correct?
Very much, yes. Very much.
I just wanted to clarify that because I kind of got the impression that you sort of dropped it. All right. Are there any other questions? Representative Garland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a chance to go down and visit the site, which I had not ever done in all my years in the legislature as a result of just never making the time. And I have to say I was really impressed with remembering the pictures that we first saw when we hadn't really done much of anything to that plant and facilities for, you know, I don't know how long, and that how much progress has been made, and it looks so much better. And I'm glad to see that continuing on with those improvements that are still needed is bipartisanly supported with the governor's recommendations, and I'm very glad about that. And I also was glad to hear, because I was particularly interested in the mental health section with the Levels program and all that, but I had a chance to see that's really needed. You know, people don't realize that children with disabilities often have co-occurring disabilities. So it's able to be accommodated then, you said, in the with the money that is there. And then could I just ask, Madam Chair, the person from the Governor's Office or Department of Finance, it was not that the Governor objected to the children's mental health section. It was just that it was thought that it wasn't ready. Did you mean ready to be implemented, or the building project wasn't ready? I mean, in other words, do you think that what's now being proposed should be supported?
Ms. Miller.
Madam Chair, members, I think there was a feeling that the program is not ready to be implemented, that there was some additional work that needs to be done in terms of how many children need to be served and sort of what the scope of this type of program would be.
Okay, well, Madam Chair, committee members, I was very impressed with the program, and it looked very detailed and laid out, and it was, the children didn't happen to be present when we were there, but the, you know, all the curriculum was there. We talked with the teacher, and, you know, maybe, I don't know if it's been improved since when we visited quite late, and the other visit might have been quite early, but I would encourage you to take another look at that, because I do think, at least when we were there, that it seemed to be quite well developed. And I think that, you know, that Levels program looked like it would really work, you know, with those kind of kids.
Well, do you have any final comments? Because we're going to move on to the Purpose Center for the Arts. Ms. Mitchell?
Yes, Madam Chair. First of all, I do want to thank you again for giving us this time. And I especially want to thank our parents who came, because I know how difficult that is. They both speak from the heart, and it's not easy to get up in front of a bunch of people and talk about your children. And I think we forget sometimes that all parents want their children to be happy and successful. And it isn't an easy decision ever for them to decide that, you know, maybe they do have to send them away from home. But I think it becomes one of those issues for parents where, and they will all tell you that You know, in the beginning, the child is the one who cries, and mom and dad think it's the best thing to do. And then 3-4 weeks after, the child's very comfortable at school and liking what's going on.
Mom cries.
Now mom and dad are a little teary-eyed because they don't seem to care if they go home or not. But all that being said, I think parents know their children best, and they see them when they're unhappy. They see them when they're not successful. They see them when they're frustrated. And they don't want to send their children away from home, but they have to balance those things. And so it is a hard decision for them to make. But I have to say, we believe that they do the right thing and that our kids are very successful and very happy.
You know, before you run up,
Well, I'm sorry. With that, I just want to extend the invitation. We are there 24 hours a day, all year round. If you're close to Parable, stop in and see us. We'd be happy to show you around. Thank you.
I will make a point of doing that. There's one more question from Representative Newman that I had missed. I'm sorry about that, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Mitchell, along the lines of successful and happy, is there any information that you can share with us as to the children from the academy going on either post-secondary school or out in the real world to work? I mean, anything you can give us along those lines?
We have statistics. Now, admittedly, our classes are small in terms of what you would compare with a high school graduating class of 100 kids. But many of our children go either to a vocational school or to Gallaudet University or to a 4-year college. Not all of them, certainly, and there are some children who end up not being able to live independently but may be in supervised group homes. So we have a continuum and a wide variety of students. This is the first year. We have a couple of our students who are attending Shattuck St. Mary's, the private school, to take some accelerated classes and be challenged in ways that we were not able to provide for them or even utilize the Durable Public Schools and provide for them. So we have a wide variety and range of students. I think for us, what we would like to be able to share with folks, and we certainly could go back 5 years and, you know, show you where our graduates are, but we also hold our students and staff accountable to the same kinds of standards that public schools do. We offer special programs in the summer for our kids who need to pass the basic skills test. And we've actually got that data to show that the fact that they come to summer school and go through those classes does make a big difference and improve their reading and math scores.
Thank you. And thank you very much. And by the way, the two ladies who testified, I thought you must do this every day. You did a great job. All right, let's move on to the Purpitt Center for Arts.
To do, that would be great. Thank you. There we go. Oh, you got them here.
Representative Latch, go ahead. Are we not going to be able to use it?
We're going to use the white screen here on the desk instead.
Okay, that'll fine.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Ron Latch, State Representative from St. Louis Park in Golden Valley, and I'm here with great pleasure to support the request of the Purpose Center for Arts Education for bonding money. I want to express my appreciation to the members of the committee that could make it out to visit the Purpose Center earlier this year. I think you saw a tremendous asset that the state has, but also an asset that needs some work on its physical infrastructure, and that's what we're here to support today. As you are also aware, the Purpose Center had initially submitted a request to the Department of Finance for something in April, $5 million.
With
$4 plus million some time ago, but since that time had scaled back the request for this year only to asset preservation. So they had come to you with a very conservative request this year, and for $1,051,000 for asset preservation on the campus. To give you more detail about that, I'd like to introduce Nathan Davis, the Executive Director of the Purpose Center for Arts Education, and Pam Paulson, the Deputy Executive Director, who will flesh out the details. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Letts, and thank you for having us here, Madam Chair and committee members. This is my first time testifying, so even though I have experience talking in a lot of different situations, I have a couple of flutters as well, so I'm very, very pleased to be here. And it was wonderful to have so many of you visit us. I think because of that visit, laying out a lot of facts and reintroducing the Purpose Center might not be the best use of your time right now. I'd like to reiterate the fact that we are a statewide agency with a mission to both educate young people on site and to serve the state in many ways in terms of promoting arts education on a K-12 level. I also find coming to Purpose from a long background in higher education that this is a place that is extremely student-centered, and regardless of the larger public debates that will swirl around us and perhaps other projects, we are a place that is really doing a good job and needs to be held up as a model of some of the good things that are happening in education. The way we handle 11th and 12th graders in transition years, for instance, is, I think, highly unusual and really important. The way we are operating with higher education in teacher training, the different kinds of models that have been developed at Purpose, looking at education from a variety of perspectives, I think make us a natural connector on a lot of levels, geographically, demographically, how you approach education from a discipline-specific manner, how you look at it from a manner that brings in a lot of different aspects of an interdisciplinary focuses as well. With that, I will move to the specifics of our bonding request and some of the spirit behind it, and Deputy Director Pam Paulson is going to have some additional comments, and we'll move from there and field questions. As Representative Letts said we scaled our request down from 4 million to 1 million. When I came in to work on, it was July 10th or whenever it was that I was able to start. My position began July 1. The request for more, 4 million was there. It involved completing renovation of about 54 bathrooms in our dormitory that have extensive mold problems. We had received O5 money, approximately $400,000, for doing a third of these. I'm very pleased that the way we're looking at our work, which is highly strategic, is such that now, going towards a communal bathroom approach, we're able to use O5 money to complete, entirely complete the necessary work on all 54 bathrooms. So a revisiting of this situation, and I guess one of the fun things, there's a lot of dilemmas when you're in administration and you're in your roles and my roles, but one of the fun things is being able to look through the prism and kind of take a different look at things. And we were able to do that, and we are able to use our O5 money, plain and simply, more effectively and complete the project. So we no longer, you're about a $2 million request is off the table. There were some additional aspects of the request, but it was basically for the completion of these bathrooms. So I feel real good about that. And I feel good about the fact that we are going to be looking at what we do in terms of requests in the future from a very strategic standpoint. What does our campus and what does our school need to do the best job that it can in the future? And what can it do to serve the students of Minnesota and educational enterprise of our state? I think clearly, as a state agency and as a leader in educational ideas, we need to be at the forefront of how technology is going to help us deliver educational models to school districts. And anybody who's been in that area at all knows that it's a challenging situation, because how school districts link up with one another is extremely variable, and we need a lot of leadership and we need a lot of synchronization on how we're going to do that. Our campus needs to look at how it's going to prepare itself for these kind of challenges. So, for the task at hand, we are asking for asset preservation, and we are asking for some areas that are fairly basic to keep the house going. A sewer line, as you can see, for $38,000, and then we are asking for air conditioning and roof work that together are a little over $800,000. We look at those as very much a joint project. Some of the working of the roof as we put on a new one is going to play into how the air conditioning comes into the building. I can give you a list of why air conditioning matters, but I guess I won't for now. But there are many ways, if you have questions to that, please ask them. But there are many ways in which we'll add to our ability to offer summer programs. There are library preservation issues. There's all kinds of factors that relate to how the completion of air conditioning at our facility is going to be extremely meaningful. And then finally, $188,000 for sidewalk and paving. And why don't we do a little bit of a show and tell here? Is that on your? Yeah. I don't know. Can we focus that a little? Is that a?
Pretty good
note. Yeah, you can kind of get the idea. We have quite a few sidewalks, and of course we did choose some, you know, areas that perhaps are going to dramatize the situation, but there are quite a few areas around this. There we go. There is focus broken sidewalk for you. And with that, I would like to turn the mic over to Deputy Director Pam Paulson, who I'm delighted to be working with. She has the distinction of having been a founder of Purpich, and as the dialogue is emerging, I'm glad to see folks here who are relating to that, of the Math and Science Academy. She's the one who went through all the initial stages of how do you actually build and develop an agency like ours. So, Pam Paulson.
Welcome, Ms. Paulson. Thank you, Chairman Sikora and committee members. I have to tell you that listening to the presentation from the academies was very touching, because in so many ways you can't quite imagine how these things fit together, but the issues that they're dealing with we deal with when you talk about a dormitory and you talk about the importance of that social and emotional support that students get in a dormitory that Sean talked about. We have those same kinds of situations in our operation at the Perfect Center for Arts Education. When you think about starting a new school, like a math and science school, one of the areas that I think we were the slowest on the draw to get a handle on was the dormitory. And so I feel like as a center who's gone through the development of a school and a statewide resource center, we do have some experience that we can bring to bear. Hopefully our mistakes can be avoided the next time around if they happen to go in some of the directions that we did. But when you're talking about starting a school like the math and science school or running a school in a center like we do or the academies, it's amazingly complex. There's very, very, very many aspects and facets of the work to consider. And then hearing those parents, I'm a parent of a graduate of the arts high school, and so I can also speak to you from that angle, which is the wonder of having a school where students go because they have a strong interest in something, and a small school with a reasonable size class so that students can get that kind of personal attention. We want to make sure that the facility is in as good of shape as it can be to support the kind of learning that we envision for these students. Part of that is just infrastructure like you see up on the whiteboard, which has to do with cracked up sidewalks and things like that. Air conditioning, which would make the dance studio, for example, more bearable in the fall when you first start, and in the spring when the school year comes to the end and it's so blisteringly hot down there. It may allow us to use our facility in the summertime and possibly rent it to other schools or studios that would like to use our facilities and could maybe be a revenue generator. We think that we're trying to be prudent with the use of the state dollars, but we also want to keep the state facility in good operating condition. So I think we're open for questions if there's anything from the committee.
Are there any questions, Mr. Newman? Representative Newman. You think I'm going to get back on Arnold here?
That's right. Thank you, Mrs. Sikora.
For the next 2 months, he's representative, right?
Right.
I have a question from a colleague. It's not my question, so I've got to kind of read it a little bit. But there's a colleague that had to leave and asked if I would make this inquiry. Wants to know whether or not the department's website that reveals your report card, whether that is up to date, and do you have audits to share with us for the years 2000 through 2005? Apparently, information regarding finances.
I'd actually would like you to, because I'm not sure. I'm new enough, so I'm actually going to let Dr. Paulson ask.
I wish I could be more specific, but it's not my question. So.
Madam Chair,
Ms. Paulson.
I do not believe the report card is up to date. We have a new principal that started just about a year ago and is unfamiliar with a lot of the Minnesota operations, and I believe missed the deadline to get that report up to date. So I would say no, at this moment it is probably not up to date. And I think I mentioned when the committee was out at the center that we are new to all of this reporting. We've never been in that loop of the Department of Education accountability system that now with No Child Left Behind kicking in and some of the testing and the new report card system. We are now in that loop and are having to get ourselves up to speed to be able to do all of that new reporting that we're being charged for. I am not sure I know what you mean by audit. Do you mean financial audit through... I'm not sure what that means.
Mr. Representative Newman.
I don't know what it means either.
Okay.
It's not my question. So,
if it's financial audits, I know we've complied, with all of the regularly instituted audits, but otherwise I'm not sure what that means.
Ms. Paulson, do you have an outside audit done?
We have the state of Minnesota auditors come in and do our audit.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And we do have our representative, Brian Steeves, here, too, if there are any questions also that need to be asked in that regard as well.
If I could just follow up quickly. Insofar as the information regarding your report card, do you anticipate that will be available before we have to vote on your funding request?
You know, Madam Chair, Representative Newman, I will keep going on that answer. I think that the door closed to have that information updated. If I understand the system correctly, there's a certain date by which you need to have it updated, or it sits until that window opens again. That's my understanding, and I believe we missed that open door. So I cannot be sure that it will be updated by the time you make a vote.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Could I just ask Brian Steves, if you could come and comment, is the, you know, the audit that you do of the Perpich Center, is that like you would do of any other state agency?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brian Steves from the Department of Finance. The division I work for is the budgeting division, and we typically are looking at prospective spending and not retrospective spending. We do have an audit division that I could check with and try and find out whether they do the auditing of Perpich or not. I'm just not sure about that. And I don't know if it's the legislative auditor that you're talking about, like a legislative right. financial audit, or is it the
is
Department
it
of Finance?
The state auditor, or
it's the legislative.
The legislative auditor.
So it would probably be the legislative auditor's office that would do the financial or programmatic audits mm-hmm. of the Perpich Center.
Yeah, okay.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Steves.
I believe we did have an audit. I'm new in the position, but I believe we did have an audit. Was it a year and a half ago? Something like that.
Madam Chair and committee members, I believe it was a little bit earlier than that because I think we're coming up to be soon due for another one. We're audited every 3 to 5 years, and I believe it's been about close to 3 years this spring.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Do you have any other comments?
I just wanted to quickly mention the segueing from the previous testimony that we had a wonderful collaboration with the School for the Blind that actually involved photography, amazingly enough. Just wanted to throw that out there. We had one of our visual faculty members and a photographer work that was jointly funded, and there actually are ways that people without sight can feel and experience imagery, and it was utterly remarable. So I just a little bit of an aside here. And we're certainly ready to come forward with any information regarding how we have been run financially and how we are being run financially.
All right. Final remarks, Ms. Paulson?
Yes, a yellow sheet in front of the committee members is a response to the question that Representative Erickson asked when you were out at the Perpich Center, which was, what do we know about some of our graduates, and do we have a way of collecting information from them? We do, and you'll see that it says we conduct a survey of alumni 5 years and 10 years out. And these are some of the general kinds of findings that we are learning from those surveys. We've only had 15 graduating classes, so we haven't been able to collect many, many years of information. But in the top box, you'll see that we graduated nearly 2,000 students. We're limited to an enrollment of 310 by our statute. The number of classes that we've graduated is 15. We have a graduation rate of 97%. And what I love to see on here is that 86% of our graduates have seemed to remain in our state, as opposed to only 14% leaving. And that brain power stays with us, and we're very pleased to see that. You'll see below that we have 74% of our graduates going on being accepted by post-secondary institutions. Many report an involvement in the arts after they leave the arts high school. However, you can see at the bottom of the page the variety of schools that they go to. We've even had students, well, you can see on here MIT is one of those schools, as well as Harvard and Juilliard. If you flip the page to the back side, you'll also see a sampling of their careers, which goes everything from an actor to an engineer to a lawyer, piano rebuilder, pilot. And so you'll get a sense of the kinds of work that the students move into. And then the very last thing on that page are some anecdotal quotes that come from those surveys, saying things like it was the reason that they stayed in school and didn't drop out, because the Perpich Center was there for them. That the entire curriculum was strong, not just the arts curriculum, but the math, science, social studies, and languages as well. and it was a really fine experience in a creative environment for those students. So I thought I would follow up because this was a request from Representative Erickson.
And we'll make sure Representative Erickson gets it. She's not in the room at the present time. So thank you very much. Thank you, Representative Latz.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you.
You bet. Members, you have three sets of minutes, and we'll just quickly do the minutes, and then we'll adjourn. We have minutes from April 21st, 2005, which I think was probably our last official committee meeting of last year. So are there any corrections or additions to... Would someone make a motion?
I'll move the minutes, Madam.
All right. Representative Dorn, are there any corrections or additions? I don't know how we would remember for sure.
I was just wondering if Representative Dorn could explain those minutes to me. I don't recall the meeting nearly as well as he does, and I was wondering if he'd cover that for me.
Representative Meslow, I see that I moved an amendment and then withdrew the amendment, so I thought that was accurate. We should go with that.
That's all I needed to know.
All right. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. These minutes have been approved. Moving on to the minutes from this past Monday. I would entertain a motion for these minutes. Please glance at them to see if there's any errors, corrections, additions. Representative Meslow.
Madam Chair, I remember that, so I'll make those.
All right. Thank you. Hearing of no additions or corrections, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? None. Wonderful. Motion minutes are approved, and yesterday, which I'm sure we all remember very well. And I know, Mr. Newman, you were really engaged yesterday, so... Do you want to move the minutes?
I still move, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right, minutes are approved, and meeting is adjourned. Thank you all. We'll see you again tomorrow.